VentureCast.
It's 9:40.
Hey, that was a good episode. We were on our game tonight.
We have earned.
I don't know if I'm allowed to give us 5 stars myself, but that was a good one.
You know what? I think our podcast is better than Ted Cruz's. I mean, I'm just going to say that. I know we shouldn't try to gloat, but.
By the way, what we really need to do is get Ted Cruz on here for 2006. Oh, I really want to know what his favorite song is. You know, we should do the year that he went to Cancun. Maybe he's picked like a Mexican number.
I got to tell you, like, I think our chances of getting Ted Cruz on this podcast are not 0%.
Oh, my God. Don't will that into existence. I will not be on a podcast
with
this freaking
guy. To stir up shit, though. He loves it. He would love to get on here and just tee us up.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
To see you all, welcome to
Reunited, and it feels good.
And look at the sun shining off of Jeff's shoulder in this video.
Both of you guys are backlit. Tip, I mean, Jeff's got the sun, and Tim, you've got like a weird lamp. Asbestos is really looking very aglow.
Really, did you put a lamp in the asbestos ceiling?
There's a real shine off the asbestos.
It's got a nice glow. Well, welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys on the Electricast podcast network. Ben Barton, you're back stateside.
I am. Made it back home.
Awesome.
Went and picked up our other daughter, Georgia, in Atlanta and brought her back here. So she's home for spring break. Everything's going great.
And awesome. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being excellent, what are you going to give Denmark?
Oh, yeah, 7 or 8. Denmark is amazing. Super nice. I mean, like, it's held down by the weather. You just have to be frank about the weather, but everything else there is really nice.
There's probably like an ocean breeze that keeps things chill as well.
Yeah, that must be it. It must be the ocean breeze. That must be it. Tim, you put your finger on it. I went for a run in the woods in Denmark.
Oh.
And you go by the bogs and the trees and stuff. And I mean, it's like old school Tolkien shit. Like, I was just like, oh, it's amazing.
That's awesome. Did you run into Tom Bombadil? Was he singing a little song?
It was exactly like that, for sure.
Wait, now you got to explain the reference because I'm lost.
You don't remember Tom Bombadil from the Fellowship of the Ring? He's one of the characters that didn't make the cut in the movie because they run into him and he sings like 8 songs and they drink mead for like 70 pages.
Oh, he saves him from a tree too.
And then on they go to the adventure. I was always the moment when Dad made me read The Lord of the Rings. Tom Bombadil was like, are you sure about this? Man. It's a very thick book with a lot of elfin poetry.
Oh, dude, and I'm sad to report, I read that book to my daughters multiple times, and you're right. Tom Bombadil is a backbreaker.
He's a tough sell. Yeah.
Good call by Peter Jackson. Well, we've got so much to do. I'm so excited about 2005. I've got a pick. You know, sometimes I have a controversial pick, but I lean into it, and I embrace it, and I'm excited about it.
Yes, we know about that.
I don't know about my pick for 2005, and yet I'm
exciting.
Forward with them, and I'm really interested to see what you all think of this particular band, which leads us to our lead-in, Little Flannery, eighth grader, my daughter. We're driving along and listening to Beverly Hills by Weezer. And she's
Is that on purpose or by accident?
That was on purpose.
Okay.
It was on the radio. I'm a radio guy. And she's like trying to guess who it is. And I thought one of her guesses was pretty cool. She's like, is this the Cars? Because that's kind of a weird guitar. And I'm like, go girl. No. So I'm like, it's Weezer. And she's like, well, I've never heard of them. I'm like, kind of late 90s, early 2000s. And she's like, is that the era of bands? And I'm like, excuse me? And she's like, you know, is it like, from 1970 to 2000, is that the era of bands?
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
And I'm
that
like,
really is. That's deep.
And I was like, what do you, first of all, like, basically she's saying the relevant portion of my lifetime is like the era of bands. and now we're done with bands. She's like, well, there aren't really bands nowadays. Jeff Simons, solo artist. What are your thoughts?
Only by choice, only because I can't afford to have a band all the time who will hang out with me. Oh, that's really, I have to think about that for a minute. Flannery is a genius. That's great.
So the I love that. And the other thing that's great is she doesn't
I also
know this,
love that you misattribute Weezer's great. I mean, Weezer's 94 to 98 that they're good. And then they pretty much suck from 2000 onward.
Well,
have you heard their new record? Like, have you heard the EP that Weezer put out secretly this week?
No. Oh, this week?
Yeah. Oh. They put like, they're trying to be cool and like secret drop. Like, no offense to big Weezer fans, but woof. It is not good.
Anyway, all right, sorry. Ben, what were you going to say?
So, yeah, so all of the biggest stars of the 50s are not in bands. Just pause for a second and get that. Like, unless you want to call Buddy Holly as a band, like, it's all individuals.
Sure. And then the Beatles change everything.
Then you get this weird transition, and then all of a sudden it's bands. And then this is right. I mean, basically, when hip hop became king, it's like, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, too, like, so much of her music comes from TikTok. And a lot of her TikTok is just dudes in their houses or women in their houses, like making sounds and putting them together. And that's not a band. Bands.
Again, that's such a 50-year-old grandpa take.
That's such a great take.
You're the worst.
I love it.
Hey, I could tell there was a guy and he was making noises. It wasn't music as far as I could tell. She showed me this video of this dude who like flicks on and off the light switch. And then he's like, oh, and that's his big hit, light switch or switch off or turn light on or something. I got to get her down here.
Turn light on is probably not the title of the big hit, but I like that.
You turn me on like a light switch. That's what it is.
You turn me on like a light switch.
Let's just move right on. Let's go to 2005's Grammy winner. I mean, I feel like this Grammy winner has passed me by as well, because I was kind of shocked at
here we go
in 2005. It's the Grammy winner.
How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb by U2.
Lights go down, it's dark. The jungle is your head. Can't rule your heart. A feeling so much stronger than I thought. Your eyes are wide, and though your soul.
Had they won a Grammy before this?
I have no idea, but I'm guessing no. This is like the
strongly no.
It's the Denzel Training Day Oscar because they missed the Joshua Tree, is my guess on this record.
Because
it's also, I mean, just to be frank about it, and not to hurt U2's feelings, but this is a retroact by this time. Like, this is like, seriously, the Grammy people are like, oh, that sounds good in comparison to the other crap that came out this year. You know what I mean?
Did you not think this was a good year?
Oh, no, I thought this year was great. But I mean, the Grammy people didn't think it was great.
Right. Clearly.
Like, this record is fine. What number, like what ranking in terms of U2 records would you put this?
It's like seventh or eighth, right? Right. Right in the middle.
There's a couple of good songs on this.
I mean, there's actually quite a few good songs. And as U2 records go start to finish, it's better than a lot of them. But it's got some, you know, it's got some filler and I like it better than the one beforehand that everybody plots all over, that All That You Can't Leave Behind or whatever that record was called. I like this record more.
Huh.
Especially now. I don't know if I liked it more in the moment, but this record's much more of an uptick or uplift. It's got a little buzz to it. It's a little edgier than the other one.
What's the one that came on the iPod?
Songs of Innocence.
What year was that?
2016, I think, something like that.
No, it's not.
No, it's earlier than that. But
2014?
I'll have to check. Because that was one where there was a lot of backlash from my students over that idea. Like, what is this band on my iPod?
To this day, I am bewildered by everyone being so bent out of shape by that. But right. 2014 was that record.
Okay.
And 2017 was Songs of Experience. which was the outtakes from Songs of Innocence, and actually a better record.
Well, that's interesting. That's going to go along with my pick and how one picks the songs that go on their records. All right, 2005, George W. Bush begins his second term. Is there anything in particular that you associate with his second term?
He won in a walk. He's the last Republican to actually win a majority of Americans.
There you go.
And I remember people were, you know, they were super mad about the Bush versus Gore thing. And then when that election was happening, like the people that I knew in New York were like, well surely. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I live in Tennessee. This is not looking good. Like,
And he won.
Yeah. I mean, he won in a walk. He just whipped up.
I never felt like Kerry had much of a chance. That whole fall, I was like,
well, hold on, I came down to Ohio. If Kerry had won Ohio,
that whole summer, I was like, this guy's getting reelected. Like, they, like, getting the election from the Supreme Court legitimized him. I was like, well, that was a second election, as far as everybody was concerned. Like, he lost, and then he won. And then it was like, okay, well, we better elect him again so that it's not weird that we had a president who actually lost.
That's unfair. I think that people thought I did a good job. I think people thought I did it. The people on this podcast maybe didn't, but I mean, like you are what your record says.
Also, Kerry was a bad candidate.
Oh,
I thought.
Dude, Kerry.
A bad candidate. I voted for him, but I voted for him with my nose closed. I mean,
oh my God, dude, when he arrived at Pat's Steaks in Philadelphia, which I don't know if you know is a swing state.
Oh, right?
And they were like, you want it with whiz or without whiz? And he was like, do you have provolone? I was like, just shoot me now. Just shoot me in the freaking eyeball right now.
Yeah.
How hard is it to say with whiz? Like, they gave you two options. You don't have to ask a further question.
Take one of the options. Oh, man. Well, I always associate his second term with Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
Just a devastating.
George Bush doesn't like black people. I've never seen a fellow celebrity more uncomfortable standing next to a celebrity than Mike Myers standing next to Kanye. And that was unbelievable. I'll never forget how to move forward.
Oh, yeah. He looked so upset.
Ha, 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 ha. And then he read that bullshit cue card and Kanye tripled down on Wayne's face. Oh, it was so great.
So devastating hurricane. 240 people die in Mississippi. 1,600 die in New Orleans. Have either of you been back to New Orleans since Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, I have.
I've been back three times. Just fantastic. It's strong awesome. Recommend.
So strong recommend to all of our listeners. Go to New Orleans. Great, great museum on Katrina. And like, you get to learn all sorts of geological quirks about that particular area of our country. But also the music just still kicks butt in New Orleans. Great music, great food, good times. Favorite restaurant there?
Also, easy to translate for the kids. Like, we brought our daughters when they were little, and then they were teenagers, and I mean, they just hit each time. Just fantastic.
You throw those sugary fried dough things at them, they're fine. Actually, it works for me as well, actually.
I was gonna say, with whom does that not work? I love that.
All right, Prince Charles marries Camilla Parker Bowles. Either of you watch The Crown?
Yep. By accident, Suze was really into it, and I kept like crossing through the living room and ending up watching the last 25 minutes of episodes. And I found it more and more exciting to watch as it got more and more modern.
Yeah. And what do you think of the dude playing Prince Charles?
I thought he was terrific.
So great.
Perfect.
I was evicted from watching The Crown. Because India loved it. And I would come in and I would just be like, what the hell is this? And I'd just start carping and she'd be like, get the hell out of this room. Like, nobody invited you to come here. I was literally kicked out.
You know what show is like that in my house? Is Outlander. Suze is a big...
Oh, India also likes Outlander.
Man, Suze is a big Outlander.
Less objectionable than the stupid crowd.
Oh my God. Outlander is just like sexy boys staring at the camera. And as far as I can tell, that's like 24 minutes.
No, there's
of it.
Magic and swords too. Come on. Don't undersell it.
But every time I walk in, it's that sexy boy like looking at the camera. And I'm like, always looking at you, Suze. Get the fuck out.
You guys get kicked out. That's terrible.
We deserve it.
I totally deserve it. I would kick myself out.
I'm trying, to be honest, Tim, it's like trying to get kicked out of detention. I'm trying to be such a bad person in detention that they're like, just go.
And it works. It works every time. I love it. All right. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is elected president of an African country. She's the first woman ever elected president of an African country. I put it to the two of you, which African country in 2005 elected a woman president?
This show, this podcast continues to humiliate Cameroon? Me.
It is not Cameroon. Jeff, do you have a guess?
I'm playing Ben Barton's version of Who Died. I'm not, I want to, I might not even name an African country. We've established what a lunkhead I am.
How about Tunisia?
It is Liberia.
Oh, Liberia.
Elects Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. I guess they don't count Cleopatra.
She wasn't elected, man.
Are you sure?
I think pretty sure.
Okay. All right.
You can ask the people who lived underneath her. I feel confident they were not electing her.
Jeff Simon.
By the way, I mean, not to be mean, but Liberia goes through a brutal, brutal, horrible civil war years later. Presumably not her fault, but I mean, it didn't work out.
Let's hope so. Yeah. Jeff Simon's redemption time. Who is Mark Felt?
Mark Felt was Deep Throat. He's the Woodward and Bernstein's insider tip guy who leads them through the Watergate break-in and the resultant cover-up that brings down the Nixon administration.
Excellent. Excellent work there.
Wait, and hold on, before we go on, what was his actual job?
He was second in command at the FBI.
That's what I thought. I thought he was the undersecretary of the FBI.
Yeah.
If he knew, how many people knew?
That is the great question, isn't
because
it?
Because he's not, I mean, with like the speculation was it was like John Dean. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
a
person directly on the inside. But then they named this guy and I was like, I never heard of this fucking guy. And he was like a sub person with the sub person.
Right.
Like
right.
There must have been 35 people who knew.
Yeah, maybe even more.
Like, it's actually a little bit disturbing that there's just one Deep Throat when you actually get down to it.
I know. Yeah. I totally agree.
I agree. Thank goodness, though.
I mean, we have Iran-Contra 10 years later, which is a million times worse and implicates an even bigger pool of people. And, you know, nobody that did not stain those reputations in the same way.
But to quote Jeff Simons, thank goodness we learned our lesson.
Yeah, I know.
As a country and haven't.
That's one of the best things about this trip down memory lane that you provided, Tim, is I'm just reminded of how often and successfully we learn from our errors.
All right. Well, since we're professionals now and we have ad breaks.
Yeah.
I've decided that the ad break should bump up against a question. And that question then lingers in the minds of the listeners.
Oh, dude, you are.
Isn't this a whole
surely
new
will also
level.
Linger in my mind. Which
well,
will
right.
Nice.
But then we can cut all the dead space that this question will create.
You're going to cut dead space from my brain? What's going to be left? That's not okay, Timmy.
So
Can you say, we'll be right back right before they ad break?
Okay.
I want you to do the whisper. We'll be right back for us.
Sweaty balls.
Yeah.
So I'm driving back from Columbia, South Carolina with Martha. We had a volleyball tournament. Her team lost in the championship. I don't want to break that down right now with the two of you. But on the drive, there's some sort of pre-recorded program on Sunday night, and they start talking about the top five most successful duos of the 80s. And so I start cranking out guesses. I'm a little disappointed in how I did. The top five duos of the 1980s. You're not looking right now, are you, Jeff?
No.
Okay, good. So I asked the two of you, and thus our listeners, who are the top five most successful duos of the 1980s? We'll be right back.
Goosebumps. Goosebumps from that.
Okay. How much time?
Let me go first. Definitely let me go first.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. You go first.
Because I have one guess.
Yes.
Hall & Oates.
Excellent.
Hall & Oates is right. It's definitely right.
Number one with a bullet, the most successful duo of the 80s is Hall & Oates. I was so upset they went with Say It Isn't So as the song that they played with that. I was like,
that is really not their signature tune.
All right.
That's for sure.
Jeff Simons, let's play it like categories. We'll go to
Wham. You. Wham is number two, I'm guessing.
Wham is number three.
Wait, they count? You're allowed to count a band as a duo.
They're a duo.
They're a duo.
George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley.
Well, good. Then I have another guess.
Okay, go.
Do the Eurythmics count as a duo?
Because yes, that would be my next guess.
So number one was Hall & Oates. Eurythmics was number two. Wham was number three. I got number five. I did not get number four.
Number four is Tears for Fears.
Number five is Tears for Fears. Excellent. Yeah.
That was good well done, work, Jeff. For sure. Simons.
And number four is the Pet Shop Boys.
Holy crap, Jeff Simons.
Wow.
That is awesome.
Timmy, we should retire because there's an actual music expert with us.
I mean, my daughter was like, would Ben and Jeff get this? I'm like, no, because this is a radio question. They would not listen to Pet Shop Boys. But
girls.
I listened to some Pet Shop Boys in my time.
Yes, and girls.
Can we name other significant 80s duos while we're at it? It was a great decade for duos, the 80s.
Well, I wanted to play with Salt and Pepper, but
they're a trio.
Cinderella.
I'm talking outside music. You've got, well, first of all, you got Eric B and Rakim. That was the other duo that came up, but I figured they didn't sell any records. But it's the year of Turner and Hooch. It's the decade of Turner and Hooch. Crockett and Tubbs.
Nice. Oh, Crockett and Tubbs.
Hans and Franz. Want to pump you up. Thelma and Louise.
By the way, am I the only person who says "Hear Me Now, Believe Me Later" all the time?
Love that.
Hear Me Now, Believe Me Later.
Hear Me Now, Believe Me Later.
So good. All right. We will now go to 2005's most successful selling album, the number one album of 2005. This also shocked me, but I guess we can't call it a retro act if it was the number one selling album.
No. Here we go. This is the biggest hit off that record. I had to look it up to make sure I picked the right song, but here it is.
It's the number one album.
The Emancipation of Mimi by Mariah Carey.
The best-selling album this year, is that true?
Yeah. Mariah Carey, The Emancipation of Mimi.
I shared my thoughts. I mean, I'm not like, I don't have a virulent negative reaction, but
okay,
doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, me too. I my visceral reaction of that is Chaperoning High School Dances. That song got played a lot as the last slow dance of the night. And it has like that particular track. The subwoofer is so distracting. Like they hadn't really figured out how to get that deep bass sound in a way that really matched. It's just like,
by the way, I totally disagree. When I was listening to it, I was like, there's one thing I like here. It's that deep noise that's working for me.
I want it to be a little
that's
deeper.
That's the best thing that happened.
Deeper and like, you know, like, this is like, it's just not doing it for me.
Wait, now can you play it again just so I can focus on the bass? Go ahead.
Yes, you can. Hold on a second. I'll give you a little more of that sound. Here we go.
I love it.
I want it to be like, I want it to like fade out.
No way. dude, it's like Running with the Devil. Doo-doo, doo-doo. It makes you really happy.
Just like it.
Awesome.
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, I wanted to get to some personal news on the podcast. Ben Barton, you put out a book.
Indeed.
The name of the book is what?
The Credentialed Court.
How's it going so far? What's the reaction? I have to admit I haven't bought it yet, but I am planning to buy it.
You are fine, and Timmy, I'll send you a free one, man.
No.
Yeah, it's been going well. Okay. I am last week I was number one in the subcategory of courts legal, which by the way, I'm here to take that. You know, in Amazon, okay, they give you the subcategories for a reason.
Absolutely right.
Absolutely. Music history podcast, and, not music podcast.
I was on an NPR show called On Point today. I'm going to be on C-SPAN tomorrow. I'm doing a bunch of local radio hits. So
you're doing C-SPAN?
Indeed. And dude, by the way, if you write my kind of book, when you get to C-SPAN, that's like the Hall of Fame right there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Is that a live hit?
I think it's going to be recorded. I don't know the answer to that, but I know I'm on it tomorrow morning.
It'd be interesting how many of our listeners out there think that you should plug the podcast as you plug your book.
You should definitely not plug the podcast when you do your awesome book. Inside the Cloistered Elite World of American Justice. Speaking of cloistered elite worlds, I'm also on this killer podcast.
Hold on. There was a Supreme Court nominee that went before the Senate committee today.
Yeah, and tomorrow, the next day, totally.
Excellent. And she seems great and smart and credentialed. And Ted Cruz, in his question, plugged his own podcast. He's like, you know, on my podcast a couple of years ago, I had a liberal guest and he went blah, 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 blah. And I'm like,
is that a thing that actually happened?
That actually
really
happened. This is why we have
the
title.
Anyway, you're comparing us to Ted Cruz and you're a monster. Wow. You're a monster, Timmy. You owe us an apology and I won't have it. I'm going to freaking stop recording this podcast based solely on the fact that Ted Cruz also has a podcast.
50-year-old white men not only start podcasts, they drop the reference to their podcast wherever they can, whenever they can. Good stuff. All right. Well, I'm glad
that hurt. I'm all flush with discomfort from that comparison. I don't know how I feel.
Well, let's go to your life and your gig. How was the gig?
It was not covered by NPR or C-SPAN, but okay, we had a good time. It was a four-band bill. This band, North by North from Chicago, is the real deal. They were a hot shit duo. They were a duo, not unlike Hall & Oates, except rocking and rolling.
Okay.
And a bunch of my friends came out. We had a great time. And couple of other local acts in the bill with me, the Lollygaggers and Scorpio Moon. It was totally fun.
Well, you said you were starting with that song that was a little bit of a nod to the Hold Steady.
Yes.
Right.
Or a complete and utter ripoff homage to the Hold Steady.
No, yes. But also, didn't you have Scituate in mind? Didn't you tell me that once when you wrote that?
It's in the first line of the song.
What's it?
Making fun of Scituate. Yeah. The first line is, Johnny was a kid who grew up in Scituate. He had a million one-liners and a habit for barbiturates.
Oh. You nailed that, man.
It's not much that rhymes with Scituate. So.
No. Good stuff. Oh, I'm so excited for you guys.
It was fun.
Yeah. You know, we talk about Ben's book. We talk about Jeff's music career.
What you got going on, baby? What's happening with the screenplays?
I'm glad you asked. One of my screenplays was read by a producer and she contacted me so we could have a Zoom meeting.
Oh, I love it.
And we had a Zoom meeting to talk about my screenplay. And at the end of the meeting, she said, okay, so we'll see what happens.
Ooh.
There we go. That's good.
Huh? That's not a no.
No, it's not.
We'll see what happens.
That's amazing, Timmy. Well done.
There's some truth to that because we will.
I think that's what the first two or three people I asked to the prom said. That's exciting. That's so good. Which one?
The O'Hare family shit show. The family reunion set in Ireland.
Nice.
I know. So exciting. Hey, the fact that someone read it, done and done. That's all I need. All right. That is all I got for 2005. That means it is time for our three albums.
Our three albums.
Who goes first?
Jeff.
That's my turn?
Let's go, Jeff.
Okay. Oh, before I go to 2005, Twitter was abuzz with Dungeon talk all week, which was fun, which Tim accidentally labeled as some kind of death metal band, which is just cracking me up to no end.
Metal.
Anyway, I made a Dungeon playlist. So Nina and other folks were like, where do I go next? If you go to Jeff Simons on Spotify,
the first
playlist after my own music is called Dungeon with 3 exclamation points. And it's a 10 song, all killer, no filler, 45 minute Dungeon mix. So get in there, people. Wow. Get in there and get involved.
Okay.
You can also check yourself into a mental institution.
You can
That's
do that
another
too.
Option.
Either
for
one.
You.
Either one. Mine's much cheaper. All right. So this year, I'm going with a record I really, really loved so much. I still really love it. It's the debut. Major label release by this band. You know, a lot of this doesn't happen as much anymore, but it used to be what bands would do in the era of bands, Flannery, is you'd make a demo tape, and then usually like a local independent or a smaller independent label would make a deal with you and put out your record. And then there was this big moment where you jumped to a major label. And for some people, that was the big sellout moment. And for other people, it's like, oh, I finally had this big audience. Like almost every great band of the 80s, at least American bands, start on a small independent label, make 3 or 4 records, and then jump to the major. So this band, I love the Wikipedia page for this band so much. It starts with these two guys who are friends from high school. One was working as a personal assistant. And the other was working as like a checkout clerk, and they were like grinding through 4 or 5 bands together, and they got 2 more friends, and one of them bought a Juno 6 keyboard at a yard sale, and then they had a fight of who would learn how to play it could have a keyboard in the band.
That's brilliant.
And it changes everything. The guy learns how to play keyboard with his right hand, but he writes all the little riffs on it. They make a demo tape, and they get signed to Sub Pop, which is a really significant label out of Seattle, Washington. And they make a debut record, which gets all kinds of press. Pitchfork loves it. They get all this buzz. They make an immediate jump to the major, and they make this record, which I think is their best record. But of course, they get the charges of sellout, blah, 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 whatever. But this is a quartet. They are very throwback in a lot of ways. There's a lot of late 70s punk and new wave in this band, which is partly why I love it so much. But it's got like that 2005 sound. It's super compressed. It's loud as hell, but not in a way that really hurts my ears. Like I really like the sound of this this record a lot. So it's got all that kind of retro throwaway, like cheap, shitty sounding keyboards, but it's also got a lot of great guitar. It's got a lot of great singing. This record is so chock-a-block with good songs. I really was looking. I could pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 songs off this record to be the one that I would want to play. But I'm going to play the big hit because I don't want to be too cantankerous. The name of this band from British Columbia is Hot Hot Heat. This is from the record Elevator, which is not the one that when you look up this band, everyone wants you to listen to Make Up the Breakdown, which is the first one. Also really good. But this record's a little more fun than that first one. And I was ready to ride or die for this band forever. And then I had the really unfortunate experience of seeing them live. This is one of the most disappointing live shows I've ever been to.
Oh, no.
I showed up at the Fillmore like ready to buy a t-shirt and buy a hat and walk around and be a billboard for this band. And they had, I don't know if it was an off night or not, but they actually royally sucked. Like they turned a 1,000.
Wow, is that true?
They turned a 1,000 person crowd into a 200 person crowd over the course of 45 minutes.
Like, because they were disinterested?
Never heard that story.
Drummer couldn't keep time. Songs fell apart. Singers out of pitch. Equipment malfunctioning. And I don't know if it was just a horror night for them, but
yeah, it sounds like it.
It was really, it was so off-putting that Ben will tell you, like, you see a terrible live show, it's just really hard to recover and stay. But 8 years removed from that bummer of an experience, whatever it's been, like, it's probably 13 years now, I went back to this record this week and it's just great. And it's fun as hell. And it's like 35 minutes. Like, it's just a wonderful, digestible, like, you put it on, you sing along, and it's over. This is You Owe Me an IOU from Elevator.
Elevator by Hot Hot Heat.
That's fun as hell all the way through.
Yeah, Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, so I had this record, and I really like this record. Here's what's a little weird about this group of bands. Basically, this band reminds me of the Strokes, and it reminds me of the Arctic Monkeys. Like, there's a whole bunch of rock bands that come out in this time.
Yeah, oh, you could put Kaiser Chiefs in there, yep. And Franz Ferdinand. Like, there's a whole, like, dozen of them. In this micro moment, yeah.
And they did not stay with me.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Maximo Park is another one.
It was like, I had this record and I was like, damn, this is really, really good. And it's, I think maybe it's that they, like, these bands had a really hard time putting out 3 or 4 good records in a row.
Right.
Part of it's also that, and maybe Jeff will just disagree with this, but part of it's for me is it's a little bit like jazz music in the 70s and 80s that sound like jazz music in the 60s. It's like they're not exactly breaking new ground, you know what I mean? It's a pretty loving remix of a sound that I really, really like. And so when I first hear it, I'm like, wow, I really like it. But it's like a little bit of empty calories, you know what I mean? Like, I have not gone back and listened to a Hot Hot Heat record for a long time, and I did listen to this record a bunch. I recognized that song. I quite liked them. There's a couple of Stroke songs that have stayed with me. I mean, Reptilia's fantastic. But I don't know, this entire era of bands has just not stuck with me the way that, and maybe it's because I'm older, you know what I mean? Well, the first generation of it.
Right. I was going to ask, is it your maturation process rather than the fault of the band on some level?
Ben's onto something. Like, there's a little bit, I would argue, of like aesthetics for aesthetics' sake in this list of 12 bands that we're talking about. You know, the one that has aged well for kids is Arctic Monkeys. Like,
oh, dude, that first Arctic Monkeys record is fantastic. And you look great on the dance floor is still, yeah, great. I'll listen to that anytime.
And my students in the rock band love the Arctic Monkeys. We're doing Are You Mine this year at the big show. They love that whole catalog. They really know a lot about that band. So, like, the Arctic Monkeys somehow. And I think it's because,
you know what's weird though, is their second and third, and I don't know how many records they have, they suck. That first Arctic Monkeys record, I think, is off the hook good. And then the other ones just do not match it. They go slow and dirty. Like,
well,
not
the third
good.
One especially, but they pick it back. AM's actually better than I thought.
Oh, is that right?
I gotta, yeah,
I'll really go back. Pretty good.
But, like, you know, there is something about, like, if what you have to offer is a sound instead of you know, like, something to say, or you wanna, you're growing, you know, like, one of the problems is like the third Strokes record sounds like the first Strokes record. And yeah. the fourth Strokes record sounds exactly like the third one. Like there's a, all of these bands are so committed to their initial sonic footprint that they do get, they start to be law of diminishing returns against one another. And that is not true of the bands they're imitating. Like there's a lot of similarities between the first Police and fourth Police records. And there's a lot that's different. Like they're trying different stuff. There's really not a big difference between any of the Maximo Park records. And I like all of them taken separately, but it is like, I like two Oreos. I don't like eight Oreos.
Oh, that's a great question. I think about that all the time. Like, what's your Oreo cutoff? And I think it's two. I get to the third Oreo and I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Eight Oreos, nine.
I think it depends on my level of general anxiety and depression. There have been times when the seventh Oreo seems necessary, but it's never a good, it's never a good decision.
Well, I love this conversation because this is just really hitting the album that I'm going to pick.
And I love it.
I'm just so interested in what you guys are going to think and how this band was processing its moment. But I digress. Because,
but I think that yeah. first Arctic Monkeys record and this record would be my two that I would pull from.
Whoa, not one of the Strokes records?
No, Is This It is pretty great too. Yeah. I think of that as funny. Like that's, you know, 2001 and it's pre 9/11. Like I think of
but
it
the
as
thing
a slightly
that's weird
different
about
era.
It is, I mean, I picked a Yeah Yeah Yes record. I don't consider them part of that genre.
Nope.
And I extra do not consider TV on the Radio. Like TV on the Radio starts
they're
same
different.
Time. But I mean, like that, all of those records I can listen to backwards. I listen to their freaking demo tapes sometimes. Like I just love
it. Wow.
Them.
So Ben, you'll be happy to know young Patrick Plain, 15 years old, came to me last week. He's like, have you ever heard of TV on the Radio?
And you were like, you don't listen to our podcast. And you grounded him.
No, he does not. I guarantee you he does not. But I'm very excited for him for coming up on TV on the Radio somehow. All right, Ben, 2005, what do you got?
The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Jeff to tell us what he knows about John Bryan, B-R-I-O-N. We've mentioned him before, but I'm just going to have Jeff just go ahead and launch. He'll know better than I will. I'll let him say
No, I don't know. Like John Bryan is a Los Angeles scene stir. He started a really important kind of open mic / invited special guest Tuesday nights at Largo, which is a little club in Los Angeles. And it very quickly became a place where some very incredibly talented singer-songwriters found each other on Tuesday nights to workshop material, to trade, to just be in community. Amy Mann is like the whole second half of Amy Mann's career can be linked to the sounds that she heard at Largo. And then she made a bunch of records with John Bryan, like that whole Magnolia soundtrack.
Is this
him.
The Tuesday Night Music Club of Sheryl Crow fame?
It is not. It's a completely different bunch of music. Although that is a damn fine group of musicians as well, that Tuesday Night Music Club. But and then he does a lot of soundtrack work, but he's also a singer-songwriter in his own right. And the records are really, they are the sign of a guy who has mastered a lot about music. They are incredibly, impeccably well-recorded. They're well-written. He's got a great voice. He's a remarkable arranger. That's what I got on John Bryan.
So born December 11th, 1963 in New Jersey, suburban New Jersey, an American singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, record producer, and composer. Here's his bands, The Excerpts, The Bats, a little band called Till Tuesday, you might have heard of.
Yeah.
And The Grays. Then he became an established session musician, producer, and film score composer. Here's his production credits. Of Montreal, Amy Mann, Eels, Fiona Apple, Elliot Smith, Robin Hitchcock, Rhett Miller, The Crystal Method, which I assume I'm the only person who likes on this thing, the act I'm going to talk about next.
Get Sky, busy, child.
Sky Ferreira and Mac Miller.
Wow.
That's an amazing list of acts to have produced. His film scores include Hard Eight, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, I Heart Huckabees,
that's my favorite. I love the soundtrack to I Heart
Lady Bird.
Wow.
Like this dude
unbelievable.
Is just been, like, and those are like all of those movies are fantastic and the music works great.
Wow.
our guy, Kanye West, releases The College Dropout in 2004. If you've seen the documentaries, like everything with Kanye, it's too long and it's annoying and it's amazing. like his desire to make it, he's just burning at it. By the time The College Dropout comes out, he is among the most successful producers in rap music. And he could have just been Timbaland. Like, it's a very good living to be the top rap producer. And he was that. Instead, he steers into a solo career. He puts out College Dropout. That record's a big enough hit where he just goes ahead and cuts another record within 1 year. Again, similar to the conversation we just had, he could have just repeated it. He's already famous for taking soul samples and speeding them up. This like chipmunky sound that he gets on the College Dropout. Instead, he goes for a completely different sound. And he brings in John Bryan to co-produce the entire record.
Huh.
Like, that guy sits in the studio with him all the way through it. Most famous in all of his work on the thing is arranging. Like, this record is so dense and complex. I mean, there's like complex string parts. There's huge horn parts. Like, this record is just packed, packed, packed all the way through. It's my favorite Kanye album. And it has arguably the best Kanye song, but it depends on between my best and favorite.
Okay.
It's not the strongest album gate to gate all the way through. It goes through a pretty significant valley in the middle. But it's got the highest high points. And also, just as an announcement of his artistry, to put out the first record and then just be like, you know what? I'm going to put out a record that sounds nothing, nothing like the first record. And I'm going to bring in a weird white guy, like, who nobody's heard of. Like, I'm not going to bring in a famous producer. He doesn't bring in Glyn Johns. He doesn't bring in someone people are like, oh, wow, good for Kanye. You know, like working with a Beatles producer. When Brian came in, there's this amazing interview with him. So funny. They're like, how did you get the gig with Kanye? He's like, I have no idea. And they're like, why did he choose you? And he was like, I produce records. And the way I describe them is, popular music records that are unpopular. That's why I do Amy Mann Until Tuesday. Like, it's just why, like, the connection, and that Kanye's ear was so good that he heard this guy's records and was like, oh, yeah, that's the guy. And not just for one song. Like, I'm going to have this guy come in. He's going to do the entire record with me because that's what I want my record to sound like. Kanye's in this like huge explosive phase. Like, he's reading poetry. There's a bunch of reference to Nikki Giovanni on this record. Like, right. He's reading poetry. He's listening to Dylan records. He's super into Portishead. Like, there's this record, Portishead Live at the Roseland. Portishead is this like trip hop act. And they have an actual live album that they put out in the Roseland in New York, where they've got the New York Philharmonic backing up this trip hop act. And like, I would say it's fantastic. I personally love it. It's actually kind of a hard listen. It's a super weird record. It's like one of Kanye's five favorite records. He's like, oh yeah, that was what I was doing. I heard that string section and I was like, how would I get so that? Great. And that's why I brought in Amy Mann's producer to be the producer on this record. I love this record. It's a fantastic record. The first three songs on this record match any first three songs.
Woo!
Heard them say,
Bold
Touch
statement.
The Sky, Gold Digger. Those are the first three songs on this record. And then the last song is Gone. And then in between, you get some ups and downs along the way. Among the ups is just the beautiful, heartbreaking, wrenching song, Hey Mama. That's just an ode to his mother, where there's a scene in the song. His mother's crying over a guy and he's 10 years old. And he's on the floor with his mom, hugging her, and they're crying. And he says, I will love you so much, you'll never hurt again. I'll buy you a car. I'll buy you a mansion. I'm going to take care of you. And it tells you so much about Kanye, and then just the heartbreak of his mom dying. Like, this is a guy who grew up with a single mom, and that's the single most important person in his life. And I can just tell you, having been in love many times, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but there's no version of love where you take away everybody else's pain. Like, it's not possible. Like, that was what he hoped to accomplish in his life. And he just set himself up where he could just never. ever accomplish that.
One could argue that's what's driving him crazy.
Yeah, man.
As we record this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Dude. And it really hurts my feelings that we have to do this now where he's continuing through another one of his various meltdowns. I actually listened to heard him say so many times in my life, and I listened to it all week, and I couldn't figure out where to start. Jeff, just start at the beginning of heard him say, but you're gonna have to go like a minute 15 to get through the end of the chorus.
Done.
This song
done.
Just tells you everything you need to know about Kanye.
Late Registration by Kanye West.
And I heard him say, nothing's ever promised tomorrow today. From the shy like Tim, it's a harder way. So this is in the name of love, like Robert say. Before you ask me to go get a job today, can I at least get a raise on the minimum wage? And I know the government administer AIDS, so I guess we just pray like the minister say. Alu Akbar and throwing some hot cars. The things we seen on the screen, it's not ours. But these niggas from the hood, so these dreams not far. Where I'm from, the dope boys is the rock stars, but they can't cop cars without seeing cop cars. I guess they want us all behind bars. I know it, and I heard them say, nothing's ever promised tomorrow today. And I heard them say, nothing's ever promised tomorrow today. But we'll find a way.
Nothing lasts forever, but be honest, babe. It hurts, but it may be the only way.
They say people in your life for seasons, and anything that happened is for a reason. And niggas gun clapping and keep the squeezing. And Graham keep praying and keep believing.
So first, that piano part,
yeah,
like, that's Brian. And that's what Kanye wanted to bring in. Like, it's just a beautiful, super tasty sample. And that happens all over the record. There's like the In Touch the Sky, the ba da ba 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 ba, like a 1970s horn part. You got this beautiful piano part that's like a Tin Pan Alley piano part.
Yeah.
And then it's Kanye who supplies the beats. And then the political consciousness of that verse, where, I mean, and also you can see everything there. Like, he's like, the government administers AIDS. You're like, he might be a crazy person. But yeah, right here, yeah, in 2005, yeah, you're like, he might be a crazy person. he's like, before you make me get a job, can we just get a raise on the minimum wage? Like, he's just got it all in there. And like, his description of his early life, this entire record is like that. It speaks to me. And this song in particular has just haunted me. Like, heard him say is an all-time Kanye song. Couldn't love it anymore.
Wow.
Plus you get the guy from Maroon 5 singing that lick.
Wait, so. That's the thing. It's a gospel
is
song.
Is it really?
And he gets Adam Levine to, yep, sing it. It's really insane.
That is awesome. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. All right, so you're putting the first three songs on this album up against any first three songs.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
It, you know, includes Gold Digger.
Yeah, we got to get the age-old podcast guys together for the first three songs argument. Speaking of those guys, did you hear their latest episode?
No.
Where they argue that the Beatles' Free as a Bird is their most impressive achievement.
What?
The one that came on the anthology that they recorded off of John Lennon's home demo.
No. Why?
I mean, you know, I love those guys, but I'm calling them out on our podcast because they have gone quite mad.
I don't even think that was an age-old question. That wasn't even a thought.
Wait, what is Free as a Bird? Do I know that one?
It's remember when they put out the anthology discs in the mid 90s of all the outtakes and stuff, and there was one new song that the original Beatles had gotten back together and recorded over John's demo vocal, and they wrote a new song together. That's how they sold all those really crappy sounding performances from the late 50s and early 60s. That was anthology part one.
Wow.
They argue in the show that it's their greatest achievement as a band.
That's great. I love that. And just pick your corner. You know what I mean? There's nobody there. That's good. You own it.
That's a hot take right there. Woo.
All right. Something.
Well, yeah. I also want to get together with them and have a podcast about kind of critical points, what was the critical musical point of the 70s, of the 80s, of the 90s?
Ah, nice.
And, you know, in terms of music, sure, but also we could interpret it in terms of ourselves, like a song that moved us in a new direction. What would you pick for each decade? I think that'd be a fun podcast down the road.
Well, we have Ben's answer right here. This record.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, I'm going to get to my pick for the best album of 2005. Jeff Simons, You Were In My Life, of course, in 2005. I'm driving around Atlanta. I'm about to cross 285, and Coldplay comes on the radio. And I say to you, I don't get Coldplay. And you say, well, it's four guys who like to make music. This is you too. But, you know, 30 years later or 20 years later. And that kind of reframed everything for me, because I thought the singer was whiny. I didn't like the sound. But when you frame them as this next generation's U2, I started to think differently about Coldplay. I don't know, though, if I'm a huge Coldplay fan.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I mean, I definitely am not.
Okay, but they put out this album in 2005 called X and Y.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are times when I'm with my students talking to them in class, and I very consciously do not ask them what they like or what they don't like. I ask them where they are engaged.
Oh, I like it.
Where are you engaged with this poem? Where are you engaged with this text? What is engaging about it? And I find myself engaged by Coldplay, even though I don't always like them. And I think to your point, it's four guys who like to make music, and I think they're trying their darndest.
Well, this is a band that tries really, really hard. I agree with that.
And one
might say sometimes they try too hard.
I agree with that. No question.
This album, they have the same producer as the previous two albums, and they had great success with the previous two albums. And they fire him after recording, I think it was 20 songs, because they don't like their sound. And then the record company's like, where's your album? And they're like, let us go out and try some. They start playing some of the songs live, and they like how they're playing them live better than how they recorded them. So they have to go back and re-record all these songs. And I think it's interesting. They're not Blur. They're not Oasis. Radiohead is, you know, reaching the apex of their powers at this time. I think it would be hard to be Coldplay in 2005.
Well, except for the fact that you're selling 20 million records and marrying Gwyneth Paltrow. I mean, there are harder fates than the Coldplay.
They do have to cheer themselves up in that vault full of money. In the Scrooge McDuck vault, while they do the backstroke in their gold coins, they're like, it is hard to be Coldplay.
You know what color gold is? Yellow.
Which, by the way, I like that song. But go.
I'm waiting. Let's play X and Y, and then let's talk a little Coldplay.
Well, I want to play Fix You from the 2 minute mark.
See, did you hear how Ben was like, just started at the beginning? Like, I'm not gonna ask a lot of the DJ.
And we're also gonna, for educational purposes, play it a little bit longer.
X and Y by Coldplay.
Just what you were. Lights will.
Have either of you ever seen them live?
Yes, I saw Coldplay live.
What'd you think?
I thought they were really good. In fact, I was ready to write that band off completely because they were starting to really annoy me. And then I saw Chris Martin do a solo acoustic like 10 or 15 minutes, and he was dynamite. Just Just terrific guitar player and rhythm guitar player and singer. And so like they bought my forgiveness. I hate the last two or three Coldplay records a lot. They really they've really gone off the end for me. But I love still the second record. It's the A Rush of Blood to the Head or something that. I love that record. I love the sound of it. I like the way the drums sound. There's a whole bunch of really great songs that got famous and a whole bunch of great songs that didn't get famous. So like you can listen to it and not be annoyed. Like I've heard every song on this a million times.
But we were talking earlier about bands not being able to kind of find a new sound or having that sonic footprint that they go back to.
This band definitely went to a whole new sound. I just happened to hate it.
Right.
That's on me, I guess. Like, I don't like where this band went at all, but they did go somewhere.
It's like when Ben talked about Eddie Van Halen. Well, it's when he got lost in the keyboard section of his search, you know. So, Ben, what do you think of their search?
Yeah, so I really, really, really like some Coldplay songs. That's how I put it.
Right.
I do not like their entire catalog. They're not an all-timer for me, but I went through and looked at it. These are my top 1, 2, 3, 5 played songs, and I would stand by any of these.
Okay.
First of all, Jeff, can you guess number one, 78 plays on my iTunes?
I can't even imagine. What is it?
Scientists.
Oh, nice. Good for you. I love that one.
So pretty. Take it right back to the start. Oh,
yeah.
Questions of science.
Yeah, that's the one.
Science in progress. I'm like, are we talking about science in progress?
Yeah, keep talking about
my favorite things.
Not since Thomas Dolby have I been so excited about science. Okay.
Guess how about number two?
Clocks.
Clocks is number four.
Oh, nice.
That's on the same record. And that 1-2 punch on that record.
They go back to back.
Oh, is it Yellow?
Yellow is number three. Okay. And by the way, I can never listen to Yellow without hearing the Triumph the Insult comic dog.
Oh, I know. That's so great.
What does he do? Goes,
your song Yellow reminds me of pee.
That's it.
And then he goes, when you were U2, I liked you so much more.
Yep. Yeah, I heard people.
But Yellow was great. That song was freaking great.
People called them U4 when they first came out, right? As an insult.
No, that's rough.
And then there's two more.
Well, I love In My Place. Is In My Place one of them? That's my sneaky love.
So one is, I've got two later ones.
Ooh, I'm going to guess.
All right, so Violet Hill.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess. Yes.
Oh, with the piano.
From Viva La Vida, right?
Cold December.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's the best song on that record by a lot.
Oh, that song is fantastic. And then last but not least, Guns from 2019.
Oh, yeah, that song's great. Is that the one that's like a 75 seconds
long? 45.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend it enough.
Oh, cool.
Fantastic. So good. Yeah, and here's what I'll say about Scientists, Violet Hill, Yellow, and Clocks. Kids love it. I mean, my daughters, like, this is a rock act that I can play. As soon as I played the Scientists, they're like, oh, yeah, that's great. Put that on the mix. Like, I'll listen to that more. Like, this one really, really translates.
Yep, he's right.
Cool beans. Cool beans.
I think it's probably, we're supposed to probably dunk on Coldplay, but I don't have it. I mean, whatever. I don't have a big appetite to do that because they, like we started, this band tries really hard. And when they get it right, they make really great songs. They don't make really great records, but who does? Like, you know,
oh dude,
there's only
how
like
many bands have five great
records?
Songs,
right?
I mean, that's a lot. You're pretty good.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And to make the call to be like, you know, I don't like where we're going. Let's keep trying and let's keep pushing.
It's definitely their pop. You know, U2's pop, like they finished it 5 minutes before they had to turn it into the record company. And that record's not very good, but it's a band like so desperate to reinvent itself, they'll try anything. And Coldplay's at least got that. They've at least got aspirations.
Yeah. And they've got
that
the
being
money.
Said, there's a Coldplay chain smokers combo, which I won't recommend. I'm just gonna go ahead and say, just don't listen to that.
That was the one we heard on the radio coming home from middle school today. And Flannery's like, I think this is Coldplay. And I'm like, I think you're right. However, there's a mix there. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that song. All right. It's 9:40.
Hey, that was a good episode. We were on our game tonight.
We have earned.
I don't know if I'm allowed to give us 5 stars myself, but that was a good one. You know what?
I think our podcast is better than Ted Cruz's. I mean, I'm just gonna say that. I know we shouldn't try to gloat, but
by the way, what we really need to do is get Ted Cruz on here for 2006. Oh, I really want to know what his favorite song is. You know, we should do the year that he went to Cancun. Maybe he's picked like a Mexican number.
I got to tell you, like, I think our chances of getting Ted Cruz on this podcast are not 0%.
Oh,
I
my agree. God. Don't seriously. That don't guy, not will that into existence.
That
I will not be on a podcast
loves
with a freaking
to stir
guy.
Up shit, though. He loves it. He would love to get on here and just like, tee us up.
Yeah. All right.
Well, maybe we should get another Ted Cruz. Let's just get a guy named Ted Cruz. There's got to be. There are quite a few, I think.
Now you're on to something.
If Ted
my
Cruz, if
thing
you're
about
out
Ted
there,
Cruz,
give us a call.
My favorite thing about Ted Cruz is who likes him? But seriously.
No.
Like Craig even Mazin. People who are political allies of him are like, I can't stand that fucking guy. Like
Craig
I
Mazin
despise that
is
guy.
Is a screenwriter. He's written a number of really great films. And I follow his podcast. And he was roommates with Ted Cruz at Princeton.
Oh, I've heard that guy interviewed and it's hilarious.
I work with the guy who went to high school with Ted Cruz and did a summer internship with him when they were both clerking for a Texas judge. And I will not tell his stories for him, but Ted Cruz's roots of being an unlikable dipshit go deep. I'm just going to say that.
Ah, poor guy.
He did a lot with almost nothing. I got to hand it to Ted Cruz. Like, I mean, he's blessed with a punchable face and a repellent personality. He has gone a long way. I'm very impressed in that.
The good
regard.
News is not as far as he wants, though. Let's keep hoping that's true.
Let's keep hoping. All right, gentlemen. Thanks so much for tonight.
Yeah.
See you in 2006.
Woohoo.
Bye.
Miles, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electric Acid.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid.